Welcome back. You're on Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Jill Marshall has the kind of story all aspiring writers want to hear. She came to full-time writing just a few years ago, and already she has a clutch of successful children's book titles to her name. Now she's making the very generous gesture of offering a sponsored residency for an aspiring children's writer at the Michael King Writers Centre. I talked to her earlier this week. So Jill, perhaps I'll begin by asking about this writer's residence. What are you proposing to do?
What I'm proposing is to give somebody, a children's writer, either new or aspiring or already maybe successful perhaps in another genre, an opportunity to sit in this wonderful thinking space that I've been using at the Michael King Writers Centre in Devonport, and have that for a stretch of 8 to 10 weeks and just be able to work on their manuscript and perhaps actually produce something at the end of that time so that they're working on something in a concentrated fashion and they're just able to use that space and the environment and the lovely thinking time that that would give them. And in addition to that, I would be on hand to do some mentoring and maybe give them some advice on a week-by-week basis. And hopefully at the end of it, if we've agreed that something is maybe ready for the next stage, I could pass it on to my agent and we might actually get something that is a successful commercial product as well.
It's a marvellous opportunity for somebody and a very generous thing to do. What prompted you to do it?
Well, it's a couple of things, really. I guess for myself, I know that I've been lucky and I've been able to get published overseas where the market's much bigger, obviously. So I've been able to see how the whole process works, and it's only because of people being kind to me, I guess, and meeting the right kind of people and just having those opportunities handed to me. So I'd really like to be able to give somebody else that same sort of chance.
Let's explore that good fortune a little. How did it begin? You came to writing after you were working in management for quite some time, weren't you?
That's right. I was in human resources and in training. So I guess part of this as well is the training side of my my nature, if you like. So the coaching and mentoring is something else that I like to do. But yeah, I've done that for 15 years or so. And it came to the crunch point, I suppose, when the need to be creative was getting bigger at the same time as the need for me to make half my staff redundant was becoming more pressing. So, some of the joy had gone out of the business side of things.
You had begun by, you studied history and then went into management and then reached that point where you had to make the change and you went and did what?
And then I went and did a master's degree in writing for children. I'd always known that it was children that I wanted to write for first and foremost. And this particular master's was the only one at that time in the world and it was 1 mile from my house in Winchester, in England. So I thought that was serendipitous in the extreme and took the opportunity and went off to do that. And really the greatest thing about doing that was kind of what I'd like to imbue into this as well, was meeting with other like-minded people who get you, who understand what it's like to want to write and have to wake up in the middle of the night and scratch something down because you can't wait any longer, and all those friends that I met and the tutors and the world that it sort of introduced me into was incredibly helpful.
How big a faculty is it and how long has it been running?
I think I was about the third or fourth year of doing it. They're now taking on 60-70 students a year, I think, to do it, and it's largely mature students, and they can do it in a variety of ways. And I think now other institutions are offering something similar.
Was it children's writing that you had a particular interest in pursuing, or was it because that course was there that it drew you to that particular type of writing?
I think it might have been a bit of both, really. But I had always intended, in fact, my career's discussion with my English teacher when I was 14 was that I wanted to write, at that time, historical novels for children. And I sort of fulfilled a bit of that by going off and doing the history degree, but stopped the novel writing. So yeah, it'd always been in my head that I would write for children, perhaps because my own development stopped at that point in literary terms, but that's what I certainly loved doing. I read and read and read as a child, and I wanted to be able to write those kind of things that I would have enjoyed as a 10, 11, 12 year old.
And this is where the story really gets encouraging for anybody who wants to take this on, because what happened to you in your writing really was remarkably successful, wasn't it? What happened then?
Well, yeah, it hasn't been an instant, success. But from starting that MA, introduced into this world, and I just really started writing pretty much full time. So I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to do that, and that led me to write several books over a couple of years, one of which was Jane Blonde, about a girl spy who's about year six. I'm never too specific about how old she actually is, so that anybody reading it can think, well, that could be me, even if I'm 8 or I'm 12.
Not year 007.
Not year 007, no. I thought that might be a little cheeky. I think the Fleming estate were slightly alarmed at the Jane Blonde name, and but we put their minds at rest. So I wrote that in the UK, and then I moved here. And this was another part of this happy journey that I've been able to come on, is that I met within a week of being here my wonderful agent Glenys Bean, and she sorted through my portfolio of half-written efforts and chose Jane Blonde. She said this is the one. We worked on it over a year or so, and then she took it back to the UK and sold it to Macmillan in the UK. And at that point we got a 2-book deal. And I'd only actually written one and planned one, so that was something of a surprise. And really, it's sort of snowballed since then, such that it's become a 7-book series. The 6th and 7th are yet to come, but we're up to book 5 now.
And your process of getting those remaining two is interesting as well. Well, that is to say, creating any of them, which I know you share with children in workshops and the like. What is that process?
Well, really, I liken it to having a baby, in that you plant the seed some way back, and then you just really leave it alone and let it grow, nurture it with nice things, and then let it sort of add to itself in a way, in volume and in complexity, and just let the strands of a plot come together. So for about 6 months, it's probably just in the back of my head, and starting to fill my brain more and more while I get on with other things. So the unconscious is taking care of the story. And then I plan it all out. So I now spend quite a lot more time planning than I used to. I don't just put it all down on paper, because I've discovered that leads to an awful lot of editing. So I plan better beforehand, and then the whole book actually comes out in a fairly short period of frantic typing.
And you're working with very well developed characters in a series, aren't you? You're obliged to sort of cleave to what you began with.
Well, that's right. And actually, now it's got to the stage, you know, I've just written the 6th book, and they pretty much write it themselves these days. They're so formed in my head that they walk in and tell me what they're going to say next. So it's become, you know, they're writing it. They're the writer and the creation as well.
I like the notion too that because you have this background in training, you're able to share your craft with people, both adults and children. And I know that children in particular love the way you go about it. Do you find that you're able to draw on quite a fund of techniques from all of those years of working that way?
Absolutely. It's quite a dilemma, I think. Probably a lot of authors, quite by nature, are introverted people. They're people who, you know, want to sit inside their head. And for half of my time, I am doing that. I'm inside my head, and it can be a little lonely, and it's certainly very quiet. But the other half of my nature is I'm quite sociable. Training, I trained adults. I wasn't a teacher. I actually trained adults. So just all of those, stand up in front of people and be comfortable with that, is immensely helpful. And it doesn't faze me when things go wrong, as they inevitably do, which I think would be a problem if you were less familiar with it. So really, I'm just now able to go out and have a good time when I'm talking to children or adults, or as I did last night, a combination of both. It's a little bit like putting on a show. And there's a slight sort of performer element to me, I suppose, as well.
Speaking of that solitude, we're here in the Michael King Writers' Centre, and it is it's a very nice place for if you are going to be alone to write, isn't it? Do you see it as particularly worthwhile for a writer to come and work?
I do, and that's really what put the idea into my head. I've always worked at home, and I've always insisted on being at my own computer, in my own office, and staring out of my own garden, and that has worked well enough for several years, but suddenly recently I found that I've needed something more, and I've actually used the Michael King Writers' Centre to run some training programs in, and it was just so lovely. It's peaceful, but it's more than just the environment. It's there's a sort of spiritual piece to it as well somehow. So it's very conducive to working well and just coming in and focusing. And you've got a beautiful view outside. And I've been thinking more and more how important it is for writers and creative people in general, I'm sure, to have the perfect environment to allow them to think and come up with ideas and just have that space to just be a creative person. And the nice thing about being here is you're not completely on your own. There are other writers here. So if you need to, from time to time, get out and have a cup of tea and remind yourself that you're still alive, then there are people wandering around and you can go and access that side of it as well. Or walk up Mount Victoria and just take in the view.
And that's our show for another week. If you'd like to hear any of those stories again, go to publicaddress.net/radio. I'm David Slack.
I'm Damien Christie, and thanks to New Zealand On Air. We'll see you next week.